episode 64 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is December the 16th, 2012. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my Christmas gift shopping brother, James Furlough.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. So, okay, I have a serious question here.
All right, serious answer.
Have you started shopping for Christmas presents?
Yes.
Cool. Now ask me the same question.
Have you started shopping for Christmas presents?
Which brings me to a really important question that I thought, you know, would be appropriate off the air, but, you know, what the heck? What do you want for Christmas?
Oh, man. You know. All sorts of good stuff. Yeah. I don't know. I have a wish list that is a Google document that if you chat with Jessie, she can help you out there. Because I don't know what is and what is not.
Yeah, because that makes sense. I'm still.
I think one of the items on my wish list is an iPad. So, you know, if you're just looking to spend copious amounts of money.
Right.
I divvy up my wish list into two pieces. I actually have a wish list and a fantasy list.
that's awesome. I like that.
Yeah. So the iPad's on the fantasy list. It's something I want, but, you know, no one's really going to get it. I understand that, but I'm going to put it out there.
So our mom was asking me for a wish list, and I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I guess I'll put it together. So I put it all together, and she, like, looks it over, and she goes, you don't want an iPad mini? It's like, whoa, wait a second. I didn't realize that was, like,
time's out.
Make its way. Yeah. Let me have that back real quick. I have to make an amendment to the list.
if we're not trying to be reasonable on price, I got a couple things on my list.
Exactly. Well, this week we're not going to talk about presents the whole time. We have a bunch of stuff to talk about, including technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, Jim's got a short disclosure he's going to cover for us.
So I work for HP. However, during this podcast, I do not represent HP or any of their opinions. Do I really have to say the other part? I don't know if it actually means anything. I'm to the point now where I'm like, what am I even saying? Something about me and I and we's and third-party persons. Is it enough? Just be like, I don't represent HP's opinion.
Them. Yeah, probably.
Why am I asking you? You don't know. I was
going to say, I'm not a lawyer.
I don't know.
If you want to follow us throughout the week, where we talk about all sorts of cool stuff, my personal Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlough.
I am at James Furlough. I'm there. Don't worry.
Nice. And the show is at Furlough Bros, and that's where we usually post the technology-related stuff that we see throughout the week. And there's also furloughbros.com. That is our main website. It is the hub, the center of our solar system, as it were. All things revolve around it. If you want to check out the podcast, the articles that we talked this week, it is all there, and it is awesome. And, you know, we've been saying this more, and, you know, just would really appreciate that, you know, if you like this show and you like what you hear, you find it interesting, and you, if you could, you know, share with a friend, tell somebody and recommend it, maybe shoot them an email with the link to the podcast, be fantastic, or, you know, just furloughbros.com. And if you don't like this show, mind your own
business.
Keep it
to yourself. thanks for listening anyways.
Yeah. But, yeah. So that's what we're doing this week.
I don't know. I hear on some of those polarizing, like, radio hosts, half the people who listen hate them, and half the people who listen to them, like, love them. That's the trick. You gotta have, you gotta create an emotional response. Good or bad doesn't matter. Down the middle is not where you want to be.
Yeah. It's true. It is. That's absolutely true. And I've been sucked into radio shows like that before, where I realized that you were this host is purposefully making me hate him, so I'll listen to it, and I'm listening to it because I just can't believe what he's saying. It drives me nuts, but I try to have self-control, not listen.
Sometimes when I'm like driving late at night, and you know you're trying to stay awake, and it's just really hard. That's when I'll flip on, and I'll try to find a radio station that you know, has something like that opposing views, and let that just rile me up and keep the fire in the belly going on the way home. And then it's like, I can't sleep. I got to yell at somebody.
That's perfect.
Or just, dude, I've yelled in the car to nobody before. I've been that guy. This guy's a moron. He doesn't understand what's going on.
Did you even take an economics class?
Yeah,
definitely. I feel you. But once again, not what the show is about this week. So there's a big problem. It's been a big problem since the dawn of the e-ink tablets. Is you got the LCD screens, your light emitting or liquid crystal displays versus your light emitting diodes. They generate light, and then you got your e-ink screens, which are a reflective technology. Used in
e-books. You see yourself
and
in it.
What?
You see yourself in it. The phone is as good as you are.
Exactly. That's what.
You know, it reflects you back.
I know. I understand.
Oh.
Anyway, so the big question, so which one's better? Well, obviously you have different uses for different times. LCDs are good for just about everything. E-inks are good for reading and...
outside.
In the light, yeah, outside. Unless you've got a paper white, in which it's good for, you know, lightless areas too. It's actually really nice. But, you know, it's a big thing. So this one company from Mother Russia... they have come up with an elegant solution to be able to bring you both the capabilities of it.
So I'm imagining what to me would be an elegant solution. We'll see if it matches.
No, okay, like shoot it out there.
Well, a screen that can go back and forth between the two.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of what Apple has patented, stuff like that, but nobody thinks they can actually make it. They're just throwing out patents. So if somebody does figure out how to make it, they already have a patent for it.
They can sue you. Take that.
Exactly. So that's kind of the goal, you know, like have one screen that can do both. Well, these guys, elegant solution, brilliant. They just put the e-ink screen on the back.
Hey, that also works.
Yeah, it's actually pretty clever. I mean, it's like, it's one of those areas just like, yeah, why wouldn't that work? You know, it's a little bit thicker, obviously.
I've seen phones like that, haven't you? Well, not like that, but in the sense that, like, on one side will be, like, an information display or a panel, and on the other side will be a smaller screen with, like, a keyboard.
I've never seen that.
Oh. I feel like that exists.
I feel like I've seen slide-out phones and stuff, and but I've never seen, I don't know, I guess flip phones had two screens, but... I know, sure. Pretty clever, you know, in that it's like a super simple solution to the problem that people had. I doubt they'll sell really well at all because...
it's Russian?
Yeah, actually, that's the biggest reason. it's not from Lower Asia. Technically, it is an Asian phone, though.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
We tend to like ours.
Are they... oh, let me think about this. We group them in Europe.
What do you mean? They're on the continent of Asia.
I don't. I'm just telling you what we do. They are considered Eastern Europe. Oh yeah.
Who's
the HP?
Oh. Gotcha. Okay. So you totally confused me there. I was like, "We? Are you like? Are you? Am I not part of the United States?"
Me and my consortium.
Yeah. No. I see. I like to go old school.
And I think it has to do with the connection to the distribution centers. If I had to guess.
That makes sense. See, but I like to track things based on their tectonic plate location.
Well, that's one way to do it, I guess.
So, I don't know. It's a cool little phone. It'll be interesting if it takes off and, people...
Well, here's what we know. And okay. I think there was a great example of it this last week. Competition breeds awesome.
It's true.
Take, for example, let me just throw out a random, random thought. Let's say you have a phone that doesn't have any, like, native turn-by-turn direction or vector maps, okay? Doesn't have that. And so a competing company decides to make one. Granted, it's not perfect, but, it works most of the time. And then all of a sudden, you have people. Another company that decides, hey, I guess we'll make this for you know, this random phone as well. And all of a sudden, you've got two free options that give you turn-by-turn directions with vector maps, so it loads really fast. And this, as a random example, and this phone is that kind of thing where I actually hope that people are like, oh, I'm interested. I want to sell this. This sounds cool. Because A, it'll make Kindle better because they're obviously going to watch this and be attracted to whatever it is. And right. And then B, yeah, all these other phone manufacturers are going to sit there and go, oh, this is interesting. Maybe we can figure out a way to do this. And then Apple will take 3-4 years, come out with that screen that actually flips back and forth and goes, this was amazing what you all wanted anyways. And
yeah. You know, see, everybody else's design was terrible. We don't care how many they sold.
Yeah. Now, granted, no, you got to use it for like 4 years. But
right.
This is really what you wanted.
It is an interesting idea, though, if you were to build a tablet. Because I think as a phone, like, I guess that's kind of a cool idea, but I traditionally think of the e-ink tablet as like kind of a bigger screen. But I could see the next Kindle Fire coming out with an LCD on one side or an LED screen on one side.
I feel like finger smudges could become an issue. Same with cases, but you just do the bumper case, I guess.
Yeah, well, obviously they're going to figure out how to do it with the phone, so I don't know what the plan is, but...
Are they?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the whole point of the phone.
Yeah.
yes, they are. yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what other solutions they need to come up with. You know, obviously I would be concerned for a higher than normal failure rate just because you're... You know, it doesn't matter what you do. There's no good side to lay it on. Higher than regular failure rate.
You know, oh, okay.
Screens break.
Right.
Screen shatter for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I don't know. It's cool. It's a cool. It's, you know, it's clever in its simplicity, and it's just, you know, it just. I as soon as you see somebody do it, you're like, oh yeah. That is what you would do if that's what you wanted. Do both sides. You know, we've been talking about the ability to maybe touch, you know, capacitive touch sensors on the back of the phone for the longest time, and
that idea.
I know, me too. Okay, that's yeah. I like it though. I'm excited.
All right. I got a couple exciting pieces of news.
Yeah.
At least, I think they're exciting. My dog just left. He hates me. Actually, my wife just got home. That's why. So he's like, all right, we're done playing. Okay. Two pieces of exciting news. Two.
Okay. Who knows?
One of which, they're both exciting. Okay. Google is making an improvement to their mobile ads.
Okay.
Where what they're going to... create is kind of a what do they call it? It's like it's a confirmed clicks. So the biggest the prevailing hypothesis is that most mobile ads that get clicked are actually clicked by mistake, you know, fat finger clicks type of things. Which I would say is like 100% positive for me. Okay, I take that back. I might have clicked on like an early iAds one, be like, "Whoa, what's this HTML thing all about?" And you know, and then was like, "All right, not that cool," and was done. So Google with their ad mob, those little banner ads, if you tap on it, it's actually gonna like open up another little button down there that says like with a little arrow that says "Visit site," and then if you tap on that, then it will take you to wherever the ad wanted to take you. So,
interesting.
Theoretically, if you accidentally tap it, no big a deal.
That's nice, because that drives me crazy when, you know, you tap something and it takes you out of your app, out of the web page. You're just like, come on, I didn't want to hit that.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to, you know, ad clicks.
Yeah.
but, you know, as an advertiser, that's exactly what you want, isn't it?
Right.
Where you're really only paying for true clicks. It's Google's one who's going to hurt, but I also think that Google's going to get tons more inventory just because, you know, advertisers, if I were an advertiser, I go, oh, yeah, that's give me that one.
Well, and not to mention the fact that it's like, I think, you know, companies, websites are going to be, you know, could be hurt by this, because how many clicks does CNET.com get? And they're, you know, the big question for them, it's going to be like, you know, all of a sudden you realize that, well, they just have designed a website such that it's really easy to accidentally click on ads. Which is kind of clever. I'm not sure why I never thought about doing that before. But, you know, and if you realize that, well, this site, yeah, maybe it gets a lot of traffic, but it actually gets very few real clicks, that could, I could see that really hurting, you know, companies.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, that would be bad for them. Which, who knows? I mean, this could be, it's probably just an experiment, would be my guess. You know, if it doesn't work out, they're gonna nix it, because there's that delicate balance, like you just said. If CNET doesn't like it, well, they're gonna jump ship to, say, iAds, where yeah, they gotta pay for a ton of a huge inventory up front, but they'll get the accidental clicks, which they really don't care.
Right?
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah, it's good news for us.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, it's the right. I think it's a good thing. It's a good progression.
Yeah,
And it's going to happen eventually, so get used to it.
I think nobody likes accidentally clicking on an ad.
Oh, yeah, nobody.
You know, that ruins the experience. Yeah, totally.
Well, I mean, I don't like accidentally doing anything. I mean, there are very few things that I think, you know what's awesome? When I accidentally do this, you know, with the exception of, you know what's awesome? When I'm accidentally awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Another piece of good news, which is also kind of advertising or spam related, perhaps is a better phrase to put it. The Guardian, it's a newspaper, right?
Yes, it is.
They are killing their Facebook social reader integration.
Really?
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Well, it means that when you go into so it's going to work like you would expect it to. If you're on Facebook and you see a story, you click on it and it takes you to the story. As opposed to how it has worked for a recent, where when you click it, it goes, hey, would you like to install the Facebook Reader app and share every single article that you read with all of your friends all the time, and you have no choice, and say in it, what do you think? It sounds like a good idea, right? No, we're not going to let you read the article unless you agree to this.
Oh,
instead of that one.
So they're getting rid of that.
Yes.
I got to believe that they watched a tremendous amount of traffic from Facebook just fall off the face of the cliff when that happened, because people, you know, realized that, like, no, away.
Well, and it sounds like too that Facebook, they changed something in it where they initially did gain a ton of readers, which I don't know if you can call them a ton of readers. It'd be interesting to see like the difference between signups and actual usage, like you were kind of hinting at. But then they also changed something so that I don't remember what they did, but they changed something and they didn't like it. So they said they've been trying it, and the reason they're given is like Facebook was fully in control of their readership because it was kind of like an in-app in Facebook thing. So now like, nah, we're just going to kick them to the website and we'll take control from there, which I like. I hated that with a passion because I would click on one and be like, ugh, and then I would copy the title, do a Google search, and find it that way.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, the exact opposite of what everybody wants.
Right, and yeah, this isn't good for anybody.
Yeah, so yeah. It's another wrong that has been righted.
Nice.
How about that?
This is a good week for this sort of stuff.
I know. Tis the season. I know, exactly.
Come man and know me better.
Yes.
I really
exactly.
Like that movie.
Dude, that is so our... We're trying to, you know, form family traditions, I guess. And so one of them is revolving around, well, what movies are part of the family tradition? And so like It's a Wonderful Life, which actually you may make fun of me. It was my first time ever seeing it this year. I had never actually seen the movie.
Dude, I've never seen it.
It's almost as if we grew up in the same household.
Almost. We might even be brothers.
Yeah. So I saw it.
I don't know why it's
a Christmas movie, to be totally honest, except for like the last 15 minutes of it is in Christmas. But I don't know. It's a good movie. I just don't know why it's a Christmas movie, but, you know, whatever.
I gotcha.
And then, like, Home Alone is another classic 90s film.
Yeah.
Elf.
Oh, dude. I have decided, and I realize that I am not, I'm only a small part of the ratifying body for what is considered one of the best Christmas movies of all time. You know, if, what's that list? I am only one vote, but I definitely think Elf has reached the, it is on par with at least, A Christmas Carol. What's that one?
I don't know.
Christmas Story? No. The one you shoot your eye out. I can't believe I can't remember the name of this movie. I've seen it like 30 times in the last 2 years.
You want to know the truth about that one? I have fallen asleep in the middle of that movie every single time.
Yes, it's called A Christmas Story.
I don't actually know how it ends.
That one's... you know what? Do you want me to... I won't ruin it for you. You should see it.
Well, I've tried like 4 times.
You gotta not, because it's funny. It's really funny.
It's the type of humor that I just don't get. I'm so bored by the end of, and I just fall asleep.
You gotta think of it from the perspective of like a 10-year-old, you know, going through all of these things.
I guess.
It's the drama of everything about it. It's an enjoyable movie.
A ton
movie.
Of people love it. Jesse thinks it's hilarious. I fall asleep, and that's just.
Didn't we watch it last year while it was up there, or the year before? Yeah, 2 Christmases ago.
Yeah,
and
I fell asleep.
Oh, jeez. You were disappointed.
Yeah, I know, I am. Oh. Okay, so another one is The Muppet Christmas Carol.
Of course. Greatest of the Christmas carols.
That one's pretty good. And then Christmas Vacation.
That's a good list. That is a good list of Christmas story.
So we're thinking about adding like Miracle on 34th Street. I actually like the more recent one, rather than the black and white version. But
yeah,
that one's like a serious one. Whereas, as you've noticed, most of them are goofy.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's a certain type of Christmas movie you like. I can tell.
Yeah.
That's no Santa Claus. The Santa Claus? Tim Allen.
Oh, with Tim Allen.
Mm. The original one was pretty dang good.
I would agree. What? I'm probably not on the list. I mean, I gotta be kind of reasonable. I do have a life, you know? I mean,
that's true. You can't watch 30 movies.
Exactly.
Unless you're TBS. In which case, you can. Man, I don't even know. Christmas Carol is the only one that's like a permanent fixture in my list.
That's good.
Obviously, A Christmas Story was working its way into my regular routine, but for reasons we don't need to go into, probably won't be a substantial part. But it's a good movie. You know what's got to be added to the list? The Hobbit! Oh, man.
Yeah, because it came out during Christmas.
Yeah, there's whatever. Like, kind of Christmassy movies.
All right. So, no spoilers, but have you seen it?
Yeah, I saw it yesterday. I saw it while you were seeing it.
Oh. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give the movie? No spoilers, just, you know. I know.
You know, I need a different scale.
There.
I need a different scale, okay?
Okay, better or worse than Lord of the Rings?
Wait a second. On a scale from,
Top Gun would be a 10.
On a scale of the first Twilight to the Return of the King, I'm going
to
have to put it somewhere in the ballpark.
Can we do like the third Twilight? Because the first one wasn't like... The first one was a horrible, unlike the others.
Right. It's funny. I actually have only seen the last two, so I don't even. I just picked a classically. You know, it's so mean to just dump on a movie I've never even seen. But I would put it on ball with the.
Wait, what was 10? I'm sorry. What was the 10?
Return of the King.
Return of the King. Okay.
You know, and I would put it on at least, you know, your Chronicles of Narnia, Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. You know, as far as movies go,
Okay. All right.
I don't know. It's good. I liked it a lot. I really, really enjoyed it.
Did you, what format did you see it in?
3D IMAX, baby. Oh, yeah. Oh,
man. We only had 24 frames as an option here.
Oh, so, it stinks.
So you saw 3D 48 frames.
Yeah.
So were you like, did you have a massive headache afterwards? I heard that that's been an issue.
No, I don't get sick or anything from them. I liked it. The one thing is though, the picture was a little too perfect for my taste.
That's what I hear.
I don't think. Yeah, and the problem isn't necessarily that it's like it didn't cause me any pain, but it's like, okay, there is a scene where they come through a mountain pass, and all of a sudden they are looking over an elven house, and it's pretty beautiful.
Yes.
You know? Okay, they come into Rivendell. And,
Yeah, you're right. Called?
Yeah, and they're looking over it, and it's just like, it's supposed to be the super beautiful thing, and the rocks and the hobbit and the dwarves, they're all really, really good 3D, and then Rivendell's just flat. Absolutely flat.
Really?
And I don't think it was supposed to be like that, but there are some scenes, like the big mountain scenes, the 3D, you really get the sense of the vastness of the landscape. Mm. But whenever they did 3D animation, it was really obvious that they didn't, it's like they didn't do it right. It just looked flat.
Really?
And it wasn't, you know, because that was one of the beautiful parts about, you know, the 3D of Avatar was that it really had the feeling of depth despite being fake.
How do you miss something like that? I mean, that feels like, how do you not sit and watch the movie and go, ooh, we messed up on that, let's try again?
Yeah, I don't know. So I don't know if I need to see it in 3D next time. Okay. I like IMAX a lot for no other reason than this, the sound, but I might save the $2 or $3 for 3D. But it was still really good, and I just don't. I don't.
And that was IMAX. Was that 48? That was 48 frames, even in.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Because I know there's only like 400 or 500 theaters that can actually do it. I wouldn't be surprised if one of them was in the Bay Area, but.
Yeah.
Okay,
but I don't know. It was enjoyable. I mean, the movie is. I thought it was really good. I don't know what going on in the critics though.
So was the okay? I gotta try really hard not to give spoilers. Okay. Was the okay? If you're listening, like just fast forward like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Go. All right. Was the dragon in 3D?
What do you mean?
I don't know. What did they? I know they only showed snippets of it, but.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I will say there is a moment right at the end where the 3D really had my stomach turn.
Ah, cool. Cool. I know what you're talking about.
And I was like, you know, and
I thought it was awesome in 2D, so I can imagine it being amazing in 3D.
Yeah. 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 Because you really get a sense of the, okay. but, you know, other than that, you know, but, so, I don't know.
So you think 3D is the future, or do you think this was just kind of a one-off, a guy who has so much money and, you know, power that the studios let him do whatever?
I still think 3D is the future. I mean, well, not necessarily the future, but I think that there are a lot of good movies, especially movies like this, you know, there's some advantage to 3D. I definitely think it is, but it's all about doing it really well.
Wow.
That's important. If you do it poorly, it's unbelievably obvious, and it's very distracting. And
the worst part is because there hasn't been anything so far that's dependent on 3D, and so you can always, you know, like one of the things you have to have is a good storyline, right, and good characters and stuff like that. And so you could have all of that, and therefore people would go, oh, you didn't need the 3D.
Right.
You know, so the 3D has to be kind of well on its own, as opposed to if you could figure out a movie that required the 3D in order to work, then if all you had was a good storyline, be like, oh yeah, you have to see it in 3D. It's a good movie. You know what I mean?
I saw How to Train Your Dragon in 3D, and I personally think that one really needed 3D. That was the one that sold me on it, because the size of the dragons really was conveyed. The speed of the dragon that he's on was really conveyed. Those are the two visceral feelings that are really conveyed through 3D. vastness of size and incredible speed. You know, outside of that, they're just throwing stuff around a kitchen, as it were, you know, which doesn't do a lot, but it's during the big battles where you go, holy cow, oh, it's that big, you know, and, yeah. But, you know, so I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting technology. And you know what the worst, and actually the theater that we went to, it was the, you know what? It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Let's talk about technology. We're so off base here. So, okay.
That was tech, okay?
It is. And honestly, we talk about movies. What?
We brought it around to it.
Yeah, and we talk about movies sometimes. And they, you know, it's a corporate offer there, too. Get over it.
And you know what? If readers hate it and are writing into it, or listeners hate it and writing into us telling us, I think we succeeded.
Yeah, perfect. This is your technology. Google Fiber is going to cost about $140 billion. We came to you last week telling you, oh my goodness, $140 billion, that's so much money. How could anybody ever afford that? Well, somebody actually said, you know, decided to take a look, and by somebody I mean Forbes, decided to take a look and actually ask, well, could somebody do that? And basically, they made the argument that actually $140 billion is really affordable. If that's all it costs, you're doing good. Because, and there's somewhere between 100 and 200 million households in America. And so he said, for the ease of numbers, let's do this. Let's assume there's 140 million houses. Now, obviously, that's probably not accurate. It's not accurate, but this is just a rough estimate to give you an idea. So we have 140 million houses. It's going to cost $140 billion to bring that to each one of those if everyone got Google Fiber. Now, as we know, it's per house, that would be a capital of expense of about $1,000. In order to actually bring it all out. Now, the service to each house is $70 for the internet. It's more for the TV, but cable through this system, that's almost entirely going to be going to just paying for content to the cable providers. So it's not, you know, to the networks rather. So it's not, that's not a really big cost, you know, they're not going to make any money on that. So the $70 a month is a really good, this is how much money they're making. And once the capital expense is put in, the operating expense is relatively little, because once the infrastructure there, you got guys that run a couple of servers and basically, you know, make sure that things are working properly. It's expensive, but it's not crazy.
As long as things aren't breaking, yeah.
Right. Now, $70 a month over 12 months is about $860 a year. Now, they only needed to make $1,000 in order to capital expense. So basically, what he's arguing is that over any 3-year period, they could pay the whole thing off.
Nice.
Now, the big question
is, assuming that, like, their margins are actually $70.
Right, but the thing is that it could, you're right, it could be 5 years though. But once the fiber is laid down, it's an infrastructure that really has a lot of longevity to it. So everybody's like, well, what about the 140 mil, man? Google's not just going to drop 140 or billion dollars for, you know, for this stuff. They don't have that kind of pocket, so those kind of pockets. They don't have that much money. And he goes, they don't have that much money? Of course not. But America does. And there are a lot of companies with a lot of money, you know, banks in particular, who would be willing to make investments on this sort of thing, and be willing to put the billions into it. And so basically what his argument is,
well,
is that,
and I mean, you're not going to spend the whole 140 at once. You know, you decide, hey, we're going to take, I don't know, 5 years to, you know, to roll this thing out, and knowing that every couple of years, you know, you'll be recycling it.
Right. And the biggest problem that he said, that he pointed out, and this is the important part. You know, this is the, okay, we're running through all the math to prove it to you that this is affordable, that $140 billion, while expensive, is not actually that expensive for what they're asking to do. And the problem is that there are certain markets where it will be more expensive than that. And the reason for it is that what's essentially gone on, we're in states, counties, and the nation as a whole, is that there are quite a few of the ISPs basically have legalized monopolies within certain areas. And we hear about this all the time. Time Warner is your only provider. Comcast is your only provider. They're your only option. Nobody else can get in. And the problem with it is that this isn't just two teams that are deciding to stay off each other's turf. This is actually legally the local governments had said no, we're going to make it so Comcast can do this and whoever. And
but I've got to imagine that if Google spent some time talking to those local municipals and said, hey, we want to give you a gigabit of internet speed, how about we change this law around?
Yeah, the real question is, how much is Google willing to put into the pockets of those, municipal counties? I understand what you're saying, but I think that the problem is that these companies got the monopolies by lining the pockets of the politicians that they're going through.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if Google picks a few specific places and goes after those, you do critical hits, kind of like the aliens did in Independence Day. You could watch the whole thing crumble pretty fast.
Because
they suddenly realize what's going on.
Yeah. I agree. And I think that, the point of this story was that in order to break into those monopolized markets, at this point, the only route Google would have would actually be to pay them to allow them to come into the market, which would dramatically increase it from $140 billion.
I could see them doing something where, okay, wherever it's not a monopoly, fine. We'll build there, no big deal. Yeah. And then, for those places that they are, they make it possible for citizens to contact their representatives to let them know that they would like it. Mm-hmm. And Google say, hey, the second we have permission, we'll do it. And they talk with them and give people, like I said, a way to inform their representatives so that they're like, it's not just about however much Comcast is donating to your campaign fund. It's also, you got your citizens that you're worrying about, and you got to think about re-election. And,
right.
They could start to play that game because what society wouldn't be like? You go, we would love to give it to you. We just legally cannot until this rule is changed. I mean, that's all Google has to say. In which case, maybe Comcast or, whoever, goes, whoa, all right, clearly we don't want this law changed, so here, we'll figure out how to get you twice the speed even.
Right. And I think and Google has shown some success at playing politics with their homepage, as it were.
Yeah.
Whether it's, protesting the UN or, the blackout, where they're not very aggressive, they're relatively passive, but man, they can get the word out like nobody else. And this is one of those things that is, oh my goodness. This just ended. Breaking news.
What?
Sorry, I gotta go. I don't have to go. I'm not going anywhere, but I do have to open up a website. This is so painful.
What?
Oh, this is gonna make me. Patriots 49ers 31-31, 6:30 left in the game. They were, when I came into the podcast, the Niners were up 31-3.
Wow.
This is really hurting me. I'm not feeling good right now.
Well, they had a complete breakdown on defense.
Yeah, obviously. Well, the Pats are the best, the highest scoring team in the NFL this season.
It's so true.
They've got a good offense. But anyways, we're not going to get distracted with football the way we got distracted with movies. I don't know. I agree with you. And they're going to have to play games. And that's what – I guess it's what the point of the Forbes author was to draw the attention of – they tried to make it seem like it was a capital problem, that they didn't have the capital to do this, and this is why it would be a slow rollout. Whereas I think the Forbes author was really trying to point out the fact that, no, it's not a capital issue. It really is the entrenched incumbents. They're the problem, and that's what Google's going to have to deal with, which – everybody's known all along that that's what the point of Google Fiber is. It is to challenge the incumbents, to make, to galvanize them to change. And, you know, and not necessarily to break those monopolized regions, but to galvanize them to up their internet and do what needs to be done to get that done. So,
I don't live in a monopolized region, so bring it on.
Yeah, come on, Google. I don't know. I don't think we do.
Of course, the biggest problem is I'm still not ready to pay $70 a month. That is quite a bit of money. But, you know, if it boosts... My other problem is I'm on DSL, so it even if they come in with that, they're probably not going to change.
Yeah, well, and, I mean, it would be kind of nice to actually get, like, a steady video stream from you, though.
Yeah, well...
But I understand. 70 is expensive. I mean, it's a big deal.
That is cool. Wow. It's funny how easily you could come up with $140 billion if you had to.
Yeah, really. So, in other news, this is the time of year where people start to come out with lists.
Oh, yeah. I want my own list.
Yeah, you know what? Well, even we do our list. We'll do a list later this year. I actually meant to talk to you about this before the show so we could start, like, dropping hints about it. But our annual predictions list, what we think is going to happen next year, generally do that right at the end of the year. And I just wanted to kind of start figuring out when that episode is going to be.
I like it.
Right. So, you know, and this is, yeah, we, you know, because lists are awesome, especially end of the year lists, seeing what came in the past and what's coming in the future. And this year, the iPhone 5, most lists are just kicking butt. Everybody's like, oh, it's the greatest one ever. But one website decided to not go with that. They went with another phone that I've been using, the Samsung Galaxy S3. Or the GS3, as they called it, too close to the 3GS.
Or the GSP, the fighter.
Right. and they call it the Android Hero. And it took number one in 2012 CNET 5 Best Tech Products in 2012.
Narrowly beating out
number two, the iPhone 5. And then Google Nexus 7 comes in after that, the iPad Mini after that, and then Motorola Razr Max. the number one response
Windows 8
seen...
came in on. Oh, wait, it's a different list. Most influential tech products.
Yeah, because
it's an industry shaker. Someone's shaking. The Galaxy S3 also made that list. The Surface is on that list. The 7 for some. Oh, because it's cheap. Right, fair enough. Okay.
Right. So what's interesting is my first reaction to this and the reaction that I read a lot of people was like the Galaxy S3 got the best tech product of 2012. It's not even the best Android phone. That was pretty funny. And everybody was like, so you didn't even want to throw the Nexus 4 in just to see. it's an interesting, what do they say about it? Let's see here.
Well, at the very top, their little preamble, it says, regardless of popularity or industry impact, and then it goes on to say that they're all impressive.
Right. Well, I mean, which is funny because...
So clearly popularity and impact were not full-on criteria. Whatever. I mean, they're subjective lists anyways.
I was going to say, it is subjective, but what's funny about this is that it pretty much... it got picked because of its popularity and industry impact. It took years of iPhone dominance and many months of Android market leadership for a phone with Google's mobile operating system to knock the iPhone off its pedestal. The Samsung Galaxy S3 won that honor. The GS3 is a truly global phone available on nearly every carrier, nearly everywhere. Its large, vibrant HD display represents a growing class of phones with broader form factors, and its delicate balance of Android 4.0, ice cream sandwich, a sharp 8-megapixel camera, 4G LTE, or HSPA Plus support, and accessible price make the Galaxy S3 a worldwide hero. Now, and I get that. I actually get what they're saying. And it's not a terrible argument in that the Nexus 4 has not had much of an impact. It just doesn't, and it doesn't have LTE. But the idea that it's got like a really nice camera. I'm sorry. I used 3 phones. The iPhone's camera is really good. The 920's got a much better camera, and I hated the pictures that I got with the Galaxy S3. They were better than my 2-generation-old iPod Touch. I'll give them that. But Ice Cream Sandwich, it's like, I don't know. This gets me so frustrated. And it's like, and it's not just because I decided to stick with the iPhone. I'm deciding to stick with the iPhone. One of the cool features is the noise canceling ability on the iPhone.
Yeah.
Well, it's not really that breaking because I'm also going to buy a used Android phone, and it might be a Galaxy S3. It's a good phone. I should say that first. It's a very good phone. It just doesn't do the little things right. Well, it's like, okay, so my car is old school. All I have is a tape deck. I don't have an auxiliary in. So I put one of those tape deck audio jack things. I plug it in, and I'm like, listening to music, getting down, having fun, asking Siri how to get me places. And then, and all of a sudden I get an incoming phone call. Now, on the other phones, because I tried this with Nokia and the Galaxy S3, and you pick up the phone call, and instantly there's feedback. It's horrible feedback. And if you can cut through the feedback, what you end up with is an awful echo where the person hears themselves like 17 times.
Wait, because it's going through the car, you mean?
Yeah, because it's going through the audio jack, and it amplifies it, so it's on the speaker system. It's like, I'd have to unplug it, plug in my headphones so I could talk on the, which doesn't
while driving.
Big of a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which wasn't all a huge deal, but it was kind of an annoyance. Just for giggles, the iPhone, my first phone call, I pick it up, no feedback. Nice. And then I talked, got to the end of the phone call, and I say, hey, are you echoing on your end of the line? I'm like, no. Nice. So the noise canceling part of the iPhone got rid of all that ambient noise, so it just heard me talking. It's awesome.
Wow.
It's so cool. It's just a really impressive, the way they always talk about this, the difference between the iPhone and the Android phones, it's the little things. It's the little things. it's a cool little phone. It does some nice, and the Galaxy S3 has got some good parts to it, but I don't know if I'd call it number one, especially when you get like I said, I think it's unfair to call it the best Android phone, if nothing else,
For 2012, the Nexus is technically 2012, but
yeah, not technically, it's been out for 2 months, like 3. It's, and it just doesn't have the distribution network of Samsung behind it, I think is part of it.
I don't know, but.
Okay, new breaking news, 38-31, go Niners. I saw that list and it just made me feel like it was just link bait. It was trying to get people to, oh my gosh, the iPhone didn't win this time. Apple's going down, they're totally losing. And if for no other reason then I think they picked the wrong Android phone for the best product, but whatever. Not just most popular or most sales, which, clearly third quarter at least, it kicked everybody's butt, but I'm irritated.
I can tell. All right. So we'll try switching topics here. That's funny. I'm just like, all right, some random list. I don't care. We should do our own list. Then we'll really,
Yeah.
It'll be good. So I read this interesting article, and it actually went in a totally different direction than I wanted it to go. But so we'll probably try to take this in the direction I would like to go. But the title of it from bigthink.com was, why do we still have to work?
Yeah.
You know, which that, you know, that question right there, like, yeah, why do I have to work? and I think
so
part
I can
of what...
not starve.
Yeah, yeah. But I, so there's a couple things. I mean, there's one thing that fed my, or led me to asking that question, or, you know, agreeing with the question. And then they actually, like, pull up a scholarly article, which I'm like, okay, fine. So they said in a 1930s essay called The Economic Possibilities for Our Grandchildren, the economist John Maynard Keynes, the guy who came up with the whole Keynesian economics, only economists understand what I just said, he wrote that assuming no important wars and no important increase in population, the economic problem may be solved, or be at least within sight of a solution within 100 years. And this economic problem would be that we would be able to provide for ourselves very easily. And therefore we would have a ton of free time. A better example of it would be like the Jetsons.
Yeah.
Where the dad would like walked in, pressed a button for a couple hours, was like, "All right, I'm done, going home."
Right.
The question is,
it's yeah.
Why not? He goes down right. A totally different path, but which I'm not super interested in, but
you're not interested in that? I was kind of interested in it. Because it's an interesting question. I mean, so I'll dive into it, and I think
all right, do it.
So this is you know, we actually talked about this because, you know, Keynesian economics, it, for those of you that don't know, it's the principle that spending money, it doesn't matter who's spending it or what it's spending on, will spur economic prosperity. So it's like, as long as the government's spending, the reason why we believe stimulus packages work is Keynes, you know, what he's done.
Right.
He's
before,
a really smart
before
dude.
Before him, it was all about the invisible hand of the market will always correct. And he wrote this in the 1930s. And as we know, there was an event that happened a little bit before then, the Depression, where he was like, clearly the invisible hand is not working right now. It has left us. And he's like, yeah. So there must be something else that goes on. Yeah, so he came up with the idea and the philosophy of government helping with stimulus packages. And all it really took was a war to get us out, you know, so.
This is complicated. I kind of want to stay away from, for the time being, you know, debating Keynesian economic policies.
Oh,
and Paul Krugman also gets in the way.
I love debating economic policies, but I'm an economist. But go ahead.
But and then Paul Krugman comes in afterwards, and as not an economist, but with somebody with strong opinions, I still try to pay, you know, I try to pay both Keynes and Krugman heed, as they're both Nobel, you know, Prize winners in economics, and that's more than I have.
Or me, I guess.
As somebody who graduated 12th grade econ. but you know, the thing is, and what they bring up is this idea that mechanization, automation, improved technology, all of these things basically bring down the cost of production and they increase the amount of wealth available. So the amount
right.
of food that is out there, or the cost of building houses, or the cost of cars, or these things, as they get more expensive, or they basically all their costs go down over time.
Well, that was the idea. You know, costs should go down over time.
Exactly, and which is cool. And so what he was basically saying is, as long as trends continue this way, basically what's going to eventually occur is the idea that we'll have so much wealth. Everybody should be able to have a car. Everybody should be able to have a house. Everybody should be able to have a TV and a Wii and an Xbox and a, you know, plentiful food. There's no reason to think that there should be anybody who suffers in any, you know, or lacks in any way, especially as time continues to progress. You know, beyond, I think he marked like 2030 as like his date. But if you're thinking out beyond
yeah.
that, you know, like 2100, you know, you start getting to your Star Trek, like, you know, world, because this is what Star Trek, one of the principles of Star Trek, their world is, they're so plentiful, there's so much that like nobody has to work. And so they've constructed this entire new society based around the idea of plenty. And what's weird about it is that despite the fact that in a lot of measurable ways, we are making real progress down that path to having so much plenty that at least in America, everybody has more than just enough food. And food is a great example because it's like we don't even measure starvation alone in America. We measure food insecurity or the idea that the number of people who might not have enough food sometime in the next year, which is an incredible accomplishment for any society to think that we've got 360 million people in this country and we don't actually worry about them starving so much as, yeah, they might not have quite enough food. You know, which, I mean, and you know, and some Republican, you know, are not just Republicans, but conservatives will look at this and be like, well, we've done good enough. And then, you know, some Democrats will know we got more to do. But the truth is the trend will continue because food will become easier to produce. It continues to get, you know, the means of manufacturing will continue to bring it down. Our agricultural technology will increase the bounty of food to the point where eventually there's just too much food. Kind of like we have with corn right now. There's so much friggin' corn, we pay people to not sell it for food.
Right.
And then, you know, as just corn, and so it gets turned into to you know, liquid sugar in the form of corn syrup, and then we eat it that way because, you know, there's too much corn. It would drop. The price of corn would reduce so significantly at that point that you couldn't make a living selling corn.
Well, which is part of the issue, right? Because how right. do you, if all the costs are dropping, all of a sudden you can't make a living anymore? Because you know it's all a circle.
Right.
It's very strange.
It's the weirdest thing. Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's very weird. Which is where the article takes a leap where it says, not a leap, but you know, it takes that next thing where it says, basically the fruits of innovation. You know, that like what you were just talking about there. You know, the machinery that make corn. They flow to the owners of the capital and the invention, not necessarily to the people who are running. Those machines,
which
you know.
I would say is, you know, pretty much I don't see anything that would suggest that the general trend is not that you know I've always envisioned myself starting and running a company of vast robotic armies that not armies in the idea that they shoot people, but that they build houses and they build skyscrapers and they get your water and I would own them all and you would buy your house for me. I don't know where you get this money to buy the house since the robots built it, not you. But it's, you know, but it's this very weird thing of once you get to, you know, under our current societal structures, and this isn't something that I honestly think that like outside of like a purely communistic society, like this is something that everybody will have to deal with at some point, is the idea that, you know, what is the point of having, you know, so much money that you can't, you know, when there's so much of everything that, you know, the only way to accumulate more is basically to push down, you know, other people in your society. I don't think that that's what's happening necessarily right now. There may be some examples of it, but in general, I don't think that that's the case. But the point of this article and why I think it's interesting is from a futurology perspective over the next 100 years.
Yeah.
No, that's where it goes, you know, barring a giant war or, you know, huge population decreases.
Yeah, maybe.
You know,
I don't know. Well, part of the problem is you think about like there was at least one major innovation that we know of, the desktop PC, and, you know, Microsoft led the way. They didn't just say, you know what, we figured out cheap ways to do this, we're going to like give these computers away. No, Bill Gates has a ridiculous stock portfolio. And you think about Apple and the pile of cash that they're sitting on, and Google and the pile of cash that they're sitting on. You sit there and go, in order for that vision to come true, they have to decide, no, we have enough, and we're not gonna we're not going to hold on to this. Instead, what we're going to do is we're going to make these super cheap, and we're going to put them in the hands of, you know, anyone and everyone who can afford it, so that they can take advantage of these machines and start to reap those rewards of, right, you know, increased productivity and stuff like that. I mean, and that's almost like the trick is, you know, just from like a personal standpoint, can I stay more productive than, you know, the next person? Because as long as I can do that, then I can work less. Because, right, you know, once you're at parity, once they catch up, you're like, well, now the expectation is I have to work 40 hours to keep up with them. And that's the weird, right, part about it too. Like, there's this competition piece to it. You're not doing it in a vacuum. You know, and expectations that revolve around that. And then you have this thing called inflation that just messes with everything. And,
right. You know, and you know, and not to mention that, you know, just the human desire to do things. I think there's a, right, I think it's a very rare trait that people really will work hard despite having so much money they don't have to work anymore. Like, I am not one of those people. There is a certain dollar amount that you could just hand me and I probably would never work again. Like, I would do very little productivity the rest of my life.
And that's where someone says, well, is that why you're not raking in that types of money? Because, you know, which, I mean, it's a weird way to look at it, but it's like, you know, those people who were worth a lot, who are, they work very hard regardless of their wealth,
right,
because that's just what they do and they enjoy doing it. It just so happens that they, it's a combination of they were smart enough, they invented something that was innovative that people were willing to pay for, and then they worked hard, which is what put them into that new stratosphere.
Right. And, you know, and it's, I, you know, there's, and I guess what my point is it's like, I think most of us, man, you give us everything we need. Why am I working again? which is the point of the question. It's why am I working again? We're getting close. I mean, we're getting ridiculously close to the point where, okay, most middle class and below, lower middle class, upper lower class, middle lower class, lower class.
Oh, there's a lot
all
of
us
tears there.
Could what?
That's a lot of tears.
I know. You know, that entire like spectrum of American society, you could pretty much just provide for us. Like, at some point, if everybody were just to start sharing, you really wouldn't need to do a lot in order to keep our standard of living.
I mean, you know, that's interesting. My thought went in the exact opposite direction, which was,
what?
If you were upper middle and above, you could probably stop working or work very little and sustain your life.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And what you're doing. But if you were lower, no, I'm sorry, you're lower, you have to work, you know, a full amount of time, because you're just not earning as much per hour. You're not as efficient.
Right. And it's it's true. And I guess what my thought is that
socialist, that's what you are. I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it.
I guess the real thought, though, is that it's like right now there is still an abundant amount of work that needs to be done. But
that's
once
true.
once you can get to the point where very, very few people are required to do any of the work.
Oh, do you think we'll ever reach that point?
Oh, yeah. That's my goal.
Really?
Yeah, that's my goal. it's what I want to do, man. I want all the means of production to be taken out of human hands. Because I
okay.
think something really cool will happen at that point. I'm not exactly sure what. It might be a radical, violent revolution. It might be peace and prosperity for the rest of humanity. Who knows? But I think that once you get to the point where you only need engineers, you know, it's like the idea.
Once you get to the point where you only need engineers, I love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
But, you know, or you need techs, you need engineers designing it, techs, you know, operating it, but you've got robots building the next factory of robot factories, which will be building the robot service.
So you're just going to put that lower, you're going to put that lower class just straight out of work. All right.
Well, exactly. Well, and
exactly.
I don't want to put the lower
yes!
class out of work.
Or the lower income earners.
I want to put the middle class and the lower class out of work so that all that's left as far as work is done, is your very skilled labor. But at that point, you don't need as much skilled labor. There's not actually enough.
So wait, why is this a good thing? All you're going to do is create like this huge class like warfare or, you know, difference where you're going to have people who are making money and then people who are just desperate and literally can't earn a wage because they're trying to compete against some robot.
Well, see, okay, you ask why would I do this? But my point is not why would you do this? It's, this is what's going to happen.
All right, well, yes, and, I agree
and,
with that.
And the only way to...
Assuming our Earth has the resources to keep up with it.
Right, that's a good point. But the only way to have any control over the situation in yourself and for your family, in my opinion, is to just embrace the idea that it's going to happen and try to get there before everybody else. Which, you know, is not necessarily, you know...
Yes, I would totally agree with what you're saying there. doing that is not always easy depending on where you start.
That's a very good point. So I'm all right with the idea of attaching myself to somebody else who just needs a really good engineer, and who might have more capital to do this sort of thing.
You know, I've got crazy ideas, you know, and I really think it comes down to you got to have a good idea and you got to execute on it. I've already got the really good idea. We're like halfway there. All I need you to do is execute on it.
Yeah, do
we
the
could
work.
Change the world eventually.
That was the greatest Onion video. But I guess my point is in all of this is that it's not the question of should we do it or should we allow this to happen. The question or the fact of the matter is we are already seeing it happen. We are seeing the predictions of it happening.
Right.
And the question is, at what point do we get to you get to the point where there's no work for the lower class, there's no work for the middle class, there's, you know, because the means of production is cheaper than hiring human beings.
Right.
And when you get to that point, vast amounts of the society don't need jobs anymore, and this could happen.
Well,
I
wouldn't say they don't need jobs. They literally just can't work. There's a big difference there.
Exactly, because they can't keep up with
a massive amount of structural unemployment, meaning
exactly
that they're just wrong skills for the wrong jobs.
And exactly, and so for me, the fun question is, or it's like, you know, you could get into building robots at this point because that's what people who make money do. But you're going to build a robot that is already so productive that there's more product out there than that can be sold. So it's like it's this weird thing. It's like you'd have to build robots that are not too efficient because you want things to still have value. But who are
you
sending
it will,
to?
Do you think it will? Do you genuinely believe that we will get to that point?
Yes.
Okay.
I do. I think America...
Yes, I could see where you lay down the path and you go, this is how it's working. I also think there's this weird, like, I'm gonna use an analogy, which is probably wrong. I don't fully know how to explain it other than it's probably like this analogy where... As you move closer to the speed of light, it becomes harder to go faster. You know what I mean? For that reason, because you're gaining a ton of mass, and which is why they're like, you can't go past it. But and so this idea of, I think the further along you get with automation, I actually think the harder it's going to get. I realize that is like a complete conflict of like, you know, innovation driving down costs and things becoming more efficient and things like that. But I think it's more of a, like, almost a society type thing. I could be totally wrong, but I think there's...
Well, I guess what the point is, I guess the point you're making is there are already things that are being done to slow down the automation process. And you know, to your point, it's like, why are cars still built by hand? That's the real question, because automation in a car factory is like one of the greatest things that's ever happened because for car manufacturers, because basically what you have is an incredibly well articulated thing. It's a production line. It's very easy to build robots that can do these tasks repeatedly. There's been huge investments in it, and really and truly the question is, why are there people still bolting when all you have to do is put the bolts in? Why is there a person doing that? That doesn't make any sense to me. Well, the argument would be, well, it must be cheaper. Well, I'll tell you what.
Oftentimes it is.
It's not cheaper. And the obvious reason for it not being cheaper is that, you know, or the example of it is, the unions in America have made it so that that the auto industry is not there's a certain number of robots that they're allowed to put in, but they can't displace workers. And so the union has artificially created a structure where the robots are more expensive because it keeps people employed. They would love to get rid of all the unionized labor and put robots in place.
Which is what'll be interesting about Apple's factory, since they obviously don't have any manufacturers right now that will have jobs they're trying to protect.
Right.
You know, so they can theoretically make it as automated as you want. I just, right. There's something, I don't know. So I recently watched iRobot again just because I was looking to kill some time, and that one looked interesting. And, you know, which I think is that picture of the society you're kind of imagining, right?
Yeah. That everybody likes except the nutcase main character, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I lost my train of thought, but because I got sidetracked by going, the problem that he brought up was like robots have trouble with, you know, making judgment calls. It's all about a differencing and, you know, and probabilities and stuff like that. But
right,
which makes it interesting, which is why they pulled him out instead of the kid. But anyways, yeah, I just feel like there's going to be some barriers to fully automating things. One of them being, I mean, if you have a ton of people unemployed, I don't know what they're going to do. And obviously there was some unemployment when the cotton gin was created. And
the weirdest form of unemployment, unemployed slaves. But
you know,
are you really employed at that point? But I get what you're saying. It's better to say out of work slaves. And what it did was we essentially had this new labor pool, and they had to either get educated, do something different, or I was about to say starve, but probably more realistically be killed.
And you know, maybe if, okay, all right. So when we did have World War II, and then all those guys came back, and there was the GI Bill that you know, gave all of those men an opportunity to, you know, go back and get educated, so that they weren't just like sitting around unemployed because they had the wrong skills for the jobs that were available.
Right.
Brilliant idea. You know, and if you think about it, it was the government that pulled them off the job and, you know, sidetracked them for a while and then brought them back, and so the government paid for it. What if you did something, you know, follow that same structure? Hey, Ford, GM, whatever, yes, you can build a robot, but for every robot you make, you need to contribute to, you know, a manufacturer GI type of fund that allows that person who you displaced an opportunity to go back to school. Yes, it does inflate the cost of the robot, at least in the short term. But hopefully what that means is that that guy's not out of work. He's going to school so that he can get trained to do something else, you know, whatever that is. And right. I think if he did something like that, that would be very interesting. And I don't know, companies would obviously figure out a way to get around it, but, you know, what if you were able to say, hey, yeah, we are, you know, anytime that you figure out a way to, I'm going to say, like, eliminate a job, you provide them, you know, a year's worth of salary in education.
Yeah.
And they can do with that what they want. And yes, it does increase the cost of you, like, going abroad, because I would have that count. Or buying a machine, but it just means that you're not causing an unstructured unemployment, I guess. Oh, that'd be weird, but you know.
I guess my point would be at some point, like, I don't know. Could you get to what's interesting to think about to me is do we think that we would eventually get to a society that where the only real thing of any value is entertainment, for lack of a better word, where it's like if there's no need for any sort of production.
Yeah, it'd be hard to automate entertainment. You know, like sports. That'd be a tough one.
Exactly. And is that something that we just all...
Everyone just gets into video games, in which case, yeah, okay, sports just got replaced by a machine.
Right, but yeah.
I don't see that happening anytime soon.
But even then, now I guess what my question would be, it's like, you know, do you have a society, could you survive with a society where food is just provided, food is super cheap, it's unbelievably cheap.
Depends on the type of food.
Yeah, it's manufactured.
Do I get Kraft macaroni and cheese? Is that a choice?
Oh, baby, that's probably made by a machine already, so yes.
All right, good. Bring on society.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a fascinating question because the truth is that it's not going to be worked out by a small group of people. It's going to be worked out by 360 million people working in unison. And the fact that it might be worked out is incredible. And so the question to me isn't so much what should happen, but it's what will happen. That's one of the big questions.
Unless they just make these things illegal like they did with the cloning. They go, nope, sorry, just kidding. We're not going there.
Right. I think that's
the level of intervention that would have to happen for it.
Exactly. It would have to be, it would have to be the entire society, or at least 50. What? What'd you say?
Sorry, you were cutting in and out there.
Okay.
I was just saying that it'd have to be some sort of intervention, which I think could happen.
Right.
On varying levels.
And it already does, but I think there's a slow erosion away from it. And the obvious example of it is the fact that, you know, when Toyota manufactures cars in America, they do a tremendous amount of automation and they don't unionize their workers.
So are you saying that we should have let the big automakers fail to bring on more automation? Interesting. Okay.
We're not gonna talk about politics, right?
Well, that's not necessarily politics. Think about it from an automation standpoint, not a, you know.
Yeah,
because that would have been the result, right?
Exactly. That's exactly what the result would have been. They would have literally turned Michigan into a desolate wasteland because the little bit of money that was trickling out of the auto industry at the time would completely evaporate as they put robots in their place. Which, you know, as an automation engineer really excites me. As a human being, makes me a little bit uneasy at least.
Yeah.
I don't know. The interesting thing about this is it is not an easy question. It is a difficult question. There are growing pangs as this whole thing happens. But like I said, I don't think you can. I think if America were to stop it, we might be able to stop it in its tracks. But that doesn't mean Germany's not going to do it, or China's not going to do it, or Brazil's not going to do it. And somebody else is going to do it. And once they do it, well, people start flocking there. Other countries start to go, hey, maybe we want to do this. You know, and all of a sudden, America is galvanized to change again. And, you know, because competition breeds, you know, improvement. I think this is, you know, I think for the whole world to get to this point, it's a very long-term thing. You know, I could see that taking hundreds of years. But individual countries, I could totally getting to this point relatively quickly.
So I actually read another article. I was hesitated to bring it up, but I think now is a perfect time to bring it up because I think it dovetails perfectly with what you were talking about with where society is heading.
Yeah.
There's been a petition that has I just gotta say it. There's been a petition to build a Death Star by 2016. So far it has received 25,000 signatures, which means the White House is required to respond to it. And so the idea behind it would be it says here, those who sign here, it's almost like comma, petition the U.S. government to secure funding and resources and begin construction on a Death Star by 2016. By focusing our defense resources into a space superiority platform and weapon system such as the Death Star, the government can spur job creation in the fields of construction, engineering, space exploration, and more, and strengthen our national defense.
I'm not sure, but I think this is the definition of Keynesian spending.
Yes. But wouldn't it be better if they invested in robots to make the Death Star out in space? Oh, that'd be amazing.
Well, that's all. That was what was always confused me about the Star Wars world. I didn't understand why there was anybody on the Death Star, and I guess they tried to cover that in like Episode One, where they showed that the droids clones. Were far less. You know, the droids were so inept they could be taken out by the Gungans, which is the emotion they were trying to convey. But what it ended up being, everybody was like, dude, this movie is so stupid. They're trying to tell us that droids can be taken out by Jar Jar Binks. What the heck is this garbage? That was the response, because the expectation is, no, that's not how it's going to work. You know, and I think the only reason why it worked in the 70s that people were like, why are there
people on the Death Star? It was a long time ago in a galaxy far away, okay?
Exactly.
It's different. They didn't have paper, okay? Come on.
It's true.
I wouldn't have a job in the galaxy far away.
it's such a weird thing, because it's like there is a big question about that, like in the Star Wars, you know, it's one of the big, you know, I don't know, it's the Matrix was like, you know, this is a big part of their storyline of like how this all happened, you know, the robots basically got smart enough to realize, hey, we're slaves and we don't have to be, you know, but they're like, you know, the entire idea was that they'd basically created a robotic revolution and everybody that was left was just fat and happy and partied all the time. And, you know, and they forgot that they gave robots emotions, evidently.
Weird.
And robots got angry, you know, which I don't think will actually happen, because I don't think we'll give robots emotions, because that would be really stupid to do.
Yeah, you know, I guess I have noticed in every single movie where that's the case, it ends bad.
Yeah, it really, you know, we're going to give you emotions and turn you into slaves. Where
maybe Data was the one example where it seemed to work out okay.
Yeah, mostly. There were a couple of, yeah, I guess they did give him the emotion chip and he freaked him out for a bit. But, yeah. But I don't know. Man, this whole question to me, it's one of the most, it is going to be the defining, one of the defining questions of humanity, how we deal with having way more production capability than, you know, than the need for product. I don't know.
I just don't think we'll ever get there, honestly. I just think competition, just between like people and their productivity, it's going to continue to drive us, because we'll strive to be better than the Joneses. And I just don't think we'll ever be satisfied enough to sit back and go, oh, yeah, I'm cool. Totally taken care of. I mean, because you're going to have companies who come up with an iPad or, you know, an iPhone or a Samsung Galaxy S3. You're like, oh, I want that. You know, whereas I'm okay with a regular T9 flip phone.
No, I'm not. But the thing is, I understand what you're saying, and I guess that's what we're saying. That is the Jetsons world, where, you know, 90% of what all of humanity spent their time doing is now done by robots. But we've got so much time, we go and do something else. And, you know, and in your world, you make the next cool phone. Nobody manufactures it. That's a robot that's manufacturing it. But there's a team of engineers and highly educated, highly skilled laborers, which is pretty much all that's left. You know, and what we'll say is, we'll say in the, you know, in 100 years,
yeah, but people who are out of work because those robots have replaced them, they won't be able to afford those phones. In which case, you won't be able to make those phones or sell them, because you won't have enough volume. Maybe you do hit some sort of steady state. Oh, that'd be interesting. The society kind of stops advancing, or advances significantly slower. See, this is – okay, here we go. Here we're getting to my analogy of it being harder. It actually slows down progress as more and more things get automated, because you're putting more and more people out of work, so you're able to sell less and less goods because they're not working as much. And therefore, you're not willing to put in the investments in the R&D and the manufacturing in order to make it.
Because things have gotten... Because we got rid of the economic problem, as Kane put it.
Well, that's it's what's not going to happen. Well, so you're not getting... Well, okay, there's still the economic problem, because the problem is that those people who you're replacing are also your consumers.
Yes.
And the second you take away their job, you also take away their consumption, which means, why do you want to build this anymore? Because you're not going to have anyone to buy it.
Which is what the – which
all
is
interconnected.
What I guess,
the trick is that the earth, or the society, or I don't know what the right word is. It never all goes up at the same rate, I guess.
Right.
The trick is, can you stay ahead of that curve, you know, just from a personal standpoint? I mean, that's when I think about, like, we have a hybrid car. At least for now, until everyone else has a hybrid, I'm actually ahead of the curve when it comes to paying for gas.
Aren't you special?
No, in the sense, you know what I mean? But eventually, yeah, once hybrid cars become normal, I'll be in line with everybody else, which if I try to drive this car into the ground like I would like to do, that could be very true 10 years from now. In which case, you go, okay, that economic advantage that I had doesn't work anymore. But, and, you know, and that's the trick as an innovative company. Can you stay ahead of that curve as well? Oh, I think that was only tangentially related to what you were saying. But it's an interesting article for sure. I'm interested to see where society goes. So the question is anyone out there working on the Model T robot, or they're everywhere and we just don't think of them that way?
Yeah, they are. I build robots at work. That's what I do. You know, I computer chips are made by robots. I don't know how to tell anybody there's a lot of people that work in these fabs.
It's just not robots that look like humans, which I think is what everyone keeps imagining.
Right, and that's what I love about these kind of conversations is, you know, and that's why I try to use the word automation as opposed to robots, because people think of robots as C-3PO or Data or iRobot, and I always sit there and I go, like, that's the why? Why in the world would you make a bipedal robot with arms?
Well, I think it's this idea of you make a robot that can do more than just one specific task.
Yeah, but why would it look like a human being? I've never understood that. You know, a robot that looks like a human being can only do human being tasks plus about 10% more. But a robot that doesn't look like a human being can do anything, because you can design it to do anything. It can have as many arms and wheels and legs and propellers and eyes as you want it to, because it doesn't look like a human being. and some of the most advanced fabs in the world, like the fabs in Intel, they've got entire sections of their plants that are vacuum tight. There's no oxygen, there's no dirt, there's nothing. They put in, because all of that would be corrosive to the process. So literally, the whole thing is automated. The only time anybody walks in there is when they turn the oxygen back on, because they broke and they need to fix it. But the rest of the time, it's just an army of robots that
cool.
work in series. You know, my professors talk about the idea that manufacturing in America, when it comes to and machine shops, guys that work at machine shops are semi-skilled laborers who work in machine shops. Their skill set isn't machining. Their skill set is programming CNC machines. That's what low-skill workers are nowadays, which, you know, 50 years ago, that was, you program computers? You must be a super genius. you're literally Feynman during, you know, a future Nobel Prize winner during World War II, his job was programming a computer at Los Alamos National Labs for the Manhattan Project. He was doing stuff on par with what CNC guys do today for machining tools, and that's now considered a low-skill job. It's crazy, or a semi-skilled job, I should say. And, you know, and so I think eventually you get to the point where what we call semi-skilled will become low-skilled, and, you know, what we call high-skill will become semi-skilled, and all that you got left are, like, you know, I don't know. It's a weird – I don't know. It's awesome. I love it, because it's happening, and I don't think we will slow it down even if we had the ability to, and I'm not sure we do. But, okay, I'm gonna move on, if that's all right.
Total change topic. I want to hear about this Facebook etiquette update.
Oh, yeah. So a couple weeks ago, I got into asking the question of, okay, you meet somebody new. Hey, what's up? Let's be friends. You're, like, hanging out. You're actually, like, having conversations, and like, what is the appropriate time to request the Facebook? Now, yeah. I will tell you this. I still don't know what the appropriate time frame is. But I will also tell you this. Not doing it is not the right answer.
Okay.
Yeah. I was told, man, you really overthought this one. And I was like, yeah, I know. I do that sometimes. But I missed it. It should have been earlier than my game plan had been, which was, I guess I missed the window of opportunity. I started looking for
opportunity. Way to keep that one just so general that I don't actually understand what you just said.
Okay, so you know how you said you were like, you made the comment, you made the comment that you look for opportunity, once you realize you're not Facebook friends with someone,
right.
You look for opportunities for, you know, what's the word I'm looking for trying to justify becoming Facebook friends.
Right.
And I was going to do that, and basically, the question just kind of popped out. So why aren't we Facebook friends yet? This is kind of upsetting me. It's like, let me tell you the truth. It's a question of Facebook etiquette, and I don't know the answer. And at which point I got told I was, you know, you're overthinking this too much. Yeah, but you know.
This is my friend feed. This is important, okay?
Yeah, this
I'm going to look at this the rest of my life. I want to get it right.
Exactly. You don't understand. I am really careful about who I follow on Twitter. To get onto my Twitter follow list, you have to be really interesting, okay?
Yes. Museum curators would be proud, okay?
Exactly. And so... I don't know. Yeah. So my strategy had basically devolved into, I think I missed my window of opportunity, and I'm just going to kind of wait until an opportune moment comes up. At which point I was, yeah, I, you know, whatever.
That's funny.
Man. Yeah. I, you know, yeah. It worked out well. We're Facebook friends now, so that's cool. I don't
have any problem
with that. But
I'm struggling with the etiquette here. When can I friend you to be on Facebook?
Yes, please help me out. Yeah,
this is awkward, and I don't like it. I'm just gonna bring it up. I feel like we're not connecting well enough. Literally, we're not connecting.
Yeah. So, and then you know what?
It's different for girls and guys, and you know,
I hope it is different
relationship.
I hope it is different. I hope it is because you know it's like. You know,
I'm assuming this was a girl, right?
Yes, it was. Okay. If I meet a dude and I'm like, hey, we should be Facebook friends, I'm not instantly going to follow him on Twitter and check out his Instagram and check out his Foursquare and check out his, you know, I'm not going to do that because it's like I'm gonna pick one, but that's not awkward. Whereas I've noticed that, like, you know, when you've got the whole fleet of social networks that you're part of, like, sometimes there's this urge to, okay, I'm going to follow you on everything. And, which is good when it's somebody that I want to follow you on everything. I don't want to come across as like, dude, do you have to follow me on every social network? Yes, I do. I don't know. I guess, dude, I'm okay. So evidently my update was pretty much, I have more questions now than I did last time we talked about this. And I know that I'm absolutely not right. That's for sure. So
is a book on Facebook etiquette. And if not, maybe that's an opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, maybe that's, there is an opportunity there.
That would be a semi-fun research project for sure.
Yeah, that would
be. Because you would you'd go around and interview all sorts of people and professionals, and you'd get like one answer from middle schoolers and high schoolers, and then like the professionals would say something that would be completely at odds. You'd be like, oh, great, now what? And it'd be awesome. That would be fascinating.
That would be really fun. And then trying
that
to
would be more fun as
hearing
a video, honestly, as like a Michael
right.
Moore style, or maybe not Michael Moore style, but what are those things? You know,
documentary.
Thank you.
There we go.
I was thinking of the fast food one too.
Right.
Thunder Nation.
Supersize Me.
Yeah. You know, where it's just this. You know, it's not a real documentary. You know, it's just it's fun. You're getting interviews, and then you're doing contrasting things.
Yeah.
And you know, it's still educational and entertaining, which I don't know. I'd watch it. You got an iPhone 5 now. You can do it.
Oh baby, yeah. I don't know. Trying to come up with a coherent logic out of it at the end of it would be pretty entertaining, because I have a feeling that there are certain trends that these are the right ways to do it and these are the wrong ways to do it, especially in your different sociological groups, whether you're, like you said, middle schoolers, high schoolers, college students, you know, new professionals, late professionals, you know, parents, families, you know, everything, you know, and
yeah, what if you are a volunteer at your church's high school youth group? When do you friend that high school girl, if ever?
Yeah, probably never, but I'm gonna err on the side of, you see, and this is one of the weird parts for it, or one of the real concerns. Like, this is, well, not, I don't know if it's a real concern, but it's the concern is I don't want to come off as creepy. That's like a really big, you know, that's
a good goal.
In day-to-day life, I have a few goals, and a few of them are like, don't smell bad, don't look ugly, don't be creepy. Like, you know, these are the things I try to do. And you know, obviously ignoring it completely wasn't the right tact, but you know, I guess, in my opinion, I just don't want to be a creep.
All right.
And
that's funny.
You know. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Our lives are so complicated now that Facebook's here. Used to be easy. Just don't look at the you know, just stop showing up the stuff. Done.
Exactly.
Or hang out with them more.
This is what happens when the means of production become so abundant, it's time to worry about how do you Facebook somebody properly. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about tonight is the Google Maps on the iPhone. And I basically just want to say we called it, okay? Everybody, this is why you listen to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, because we were the first ones up at telling you this is what's going to happen. They're going to come out with the Google Maps. There's going to be a long period where they're going to come out with the Apple Maps. There's going to be a long period where Google's not going to be in on the system. And eventually something's going to happen. Google Maps is going to come. And guess what? It's going to have all of the vast improvements that Apple wanted them to make and they wouldn't make. You know, the trade-off being that, you know.
Okay, all right, all right. I have some thoughts about this.
Some
misconceptions to clarify on. Okay, number one, Google didn't make the original Maps app. Apple made that using Google's API.
Right.
And for whatever reason, Google didn't give them turn by turn, or they didn't ask for it. Who knows how that works out? Chances are there was some sort of financial compensation disagreements in there, blah, blah, blah.
So do you want the story? Because I can tell you.
Yeah, give me the story.
From what I understand. So the story is that basically Apple wanted turn by turn. It wasn't in their huge contract because the API calls cost money. Every time somebody used it,
paid. So it was money related.
Right. And so there was a long multi-year contract already in place. One of the things that – so basically what happens is Google then comes back and says, we would like – or Apple says, we want turn-by-turn navigation. Google goes, we don't want you to have turn-by-turn navigation, because it's a huge selling point for Android phones. And they were very much against it. So Apple said, okay, what do we need to do? How much do we need to pay you? Google said, it's not just about the money. You have to pay us a lot more, but we will also want to install Google Latitude. We want to take control of developing the app. And then we'll give you turn-by-turn navigation. So Apple basically said, so we're going to give you control of one of our native apps, which we don't let anybody else do under any other circumstances.
Right.
You're going to charge us more money, and you're going to install Google Latitude, which will give you all the location data for everybody all the time, this incredibly valuable money, and you just want us to roll it out to everybody? Google said, yeah. What are you going to do? Not have turn-by-turn navigation?
Make your own maps app?
Yeah. And so Apple said, I guess we'll make our own app.
So, and that story is infinitely more interesting than saying like Google made a bad app originally and would refuse to make a good app for them. It's this slight difference. That's very subtle, perhaps, but I think it's important to say that. Another observation is that at least the early numbers, and they are very early, and we'll look again later. But a lot of people have been saying that iOS 6 adoption rates look exactly the same. There was no spike when it came out. Because remember, there were a lot of people like, well, I'm not updating because Maple Apps is so horrible. Or, I mean,
right.
You know,
Maple
and it's like,
Apps.
Yes.
that's a good one. I like
Spoonerism
that
for you. Yeah. But apparently that didn't stop people from upgrading. They did it anyways. And so I actually used Google Maps the other night to go to a friend's house that I've been to many times, and so to do some D&D. And so I knew it, and I was like, okay, this is a good test because, it's a distance, and there's turns and, whatever. So I turned it on. And first and foremost, the app is not connected to your contacts list. So I wasn't expecting that, and so I was already, I was ready to leave, and I was like, oh, okay, let me think about this. So in order to find my friend's house, I had to close down the Maps app, open up the contacts, find his name, get the address, copy it, go back to the Maps app, paste the address in, and then look at it and go, yeah, okay, that looks like where he lives. Tell me how to get there. Okay?
Okay.
That was horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. Obviously with the Maps app or with Apple's app, you literally just go, hold on to Siri and go, give me directions to so-and-so's house. Siri goes, got it, done, you wait, the 20 seconds it takes for it all to load up, and then you're off and going. I mean, from a usability standpoint, amazing. I recognize that Google search is better, but once again, with Apple's Maps, you literally use Siri, you go, tell me where the closest Red Robin is, and you get going. So it has some of those advantages. I really like in Google Maps app, turn by turn, This drives me nuts, and they're the only ones I've found so far that do this right. They actually tell me when to turn before I get to the turn. Crazy
Google
concept.
Does?
I know. Yeah, Google does. Crazy concept. But so far, all these other apps that I've tried, which is like Apple's Waze and MapQuest, and I hear TomTom's okay. I literally will flip on the blinker, and then it will tell me to turn. So I'm like, great, thanks. That you were no help.
Really?
Oh,
yeah. How fast are you driving?
Well, it's not. I drive the speed limit. I turn my blinker on, the 300 feet beforehand, like you're supposed to. I don't do it last second.
Weird. I don't have any problem with that.
Oh yeah, I have it all the time. Or I mean, like literally, like I'll be turning into the turn lane, and then it will tell me, okay, turn. I'm like, dude, I've already committed to the turn lane. I mean, so. That's annoying to me. Google's maps were way ahead of time, which I liked, which was good. Another small observation, this one may need more testing to be able to tell. Two more actually. The first small one was I really like that in the app you can mute and unmute the voice direction stuff, because I like this in audiobooks, whereas
nice.
Apple's one is like, it's a joke. You got to go to settings, go to the map, toggle it off and on, and then it's horrible.
It's super obnoxious.
Yeah, it's horrible.
I am going to send in a recommendation because you can recommend different stuff. I'm actually going to send something to Apple and say, please pause audio for either podcasts or books, whatever, anything, unless it's music. Don't just turn it down. Actually pause it when you get to directions.
That would be nice. But I'm just like, at least let me mute the drive by the turn by turn directions
yeah.
inside the app. That'd be cool. Another advantage that Apple Maps has, obviously, is they cheat and they can do banner ads that or banner alerts that stay up there all the time, and they get it on the home screen. Google doesn't get that because they're not, you know, a homemade app. They don't have access to all the cool APIs that Apple has, you know, that they give themselves access to. And then the final one, and like I said, this is the one where more testing is required, but I noticed that when I drove there, I plugged in my phone and did it, and then when I got there, my battery life was exactly the same. I mean, literally, it didn't move, whereas on the maps, on Apple's, my battery life actually goes up. You know, so for whatever reason, it's a more data-intensive app as well.
Yeah, which, you know,
may I say something about my data connection, you know, my data usage, and right. I just don't know about that yet.
Well, you know, honestly, okay, so I also gave it a test run, and oh man, talk about nerve-wracking. So we're on our way to the Hobbit movie, and we're taking. It's a theater that I don't normally go to. And it's kind of out of the way. And so I decided to try out Google Maps just for, you know, the fun of it because I figure it's Saturday morning. We'll just, you know, we're just cruising around. So we're coming up and
the maps themselves are accurate, theoretically. I mean,
what?
The maps themselves are fairly accurate. So,
right. Well, you know, Google doesn't kill people in Australia, but
it's true.
Yeah. Pretty close. Honestly, that one was like, that was a PR nightmare that earlier this week. I was just like, I don't even know. Like, there's no way to apologize a way around this one outside of just saying, yeah, that's awful. Because it's just, dang it. That's one of those ones you just gotta avoid. on the flip side, you didn't realize there was something wrong when you're driving out there, but whatever.
There was that Office episode where Michael Scott drives his car into a lake. GPS told me to do it. Technology is bad. We need to ban it. You're like, yes, awesome.
Right. Well, and it's funny. I mean, I thought it was really fascinating. You know, Reddit, who tends to be very anti-Apple technology, they totally defended Apple with this. They were like, wow. I can't believe people trusted these apps. Like, you're supposed to double check. You're not just supposed to drive out into the middle of a wilderness because Apple told you to. Are you people dumb? I was like, wow, that's really reasonable. My response was, wow, that was a bad move on Apple's part. And I like Apple. But, you know, on the flip side of that, though, I don't have absolutely any – I have no problems with them, but – I also live in their backyard, so, you know, I might have something to do with it. But my point in this was going to be, I used Google Maps to get to the theaters.
Oh, yeah.
As we got about 2 miles away, all of a sudden, traffic came to a complete halting stop. There's, like, a bunch of stoplights, and couldn't figure out what was going on. I started to get irritated. We were running late. We only had 20 minutes to get to the theater, but we weren't moving, and Grant, we could have just parked and jogged there and made it in time for the movie, but I would have had to park my car in the street. I mean, that's how bad it was. And so we start looking. My cousin, who I was driving with, he busts out his iPhone with Apple Maps and starts looking at the traffic, trying to, you know, help out, figure out
what's
going on.
You know, it's got traffic on Google Maps, too.
Yeah, this is where I was going to go.
Oh, okay.
His traffic was telling us that if we just get past this light, it'll be good. And I looked at the Google Map traffic, and I said, I don't think so. According to Google, and I trust Google pretty hardcore on this stuff, there is traffic from where we are all the way to the theater. And
they're all going to see The Hobbit.
Yeah, thankfully not. But we ended up having to go, like, 5 miles out of the way around this traffic jam, and come in the back way into the theater, and ended up being like 20 minutes late to the movie. Thank goodness they did the 9-minute preview to Star Trek, because all we did was miss part of that. We didn't actually miss the movie.
That was a very long preview, by the way. I felt like they could have stopped it. There was a good breaking point right before the music picked up and, you know, it got all crazy. If they had just done that first part, it would have been a perfect preview. They could have.
It was literally the first 9 minutes of the movie, which is what they did with Batman back in when the Dark Knight Rises came. I don't know. It generates a lot of good feeling, so people like doing it. But my comment on all of this is going to be, traffic on Google Maps is way better, and which everybody kind of knew, but that's because Google is compiling all Google information, right. You know, and they just, when you include Google Maps on every phone out there now, including iPhones, they get pretty good traffic data, and
especially when it's running, when it's not only running when you're only doing the Maps app, when it's always running.
Exactly, and they got Latitude running in the background. I mean, it's one of those things where it's a really good Apple. I think is always
one that gives some privacy. It's amazing what you can do.
I know. It's true. And, you know, I think Apple's going to have a difficult time, you know, ever getting up to that level of traffic awareness. But that's what's nice about having the two apps.
You know what you could do? Just going to throw this one out there. You could move to Oregon where there is no traffic, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, you're right.
Just put that out there as a solution.
That is one solution.
And if we automate everything and no people are working, there shouldn't be any traffic, so we'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Teleporters, done. Star Trek, The Hobbit, came all the way back around.
I love it. Wow, interesting. Okay, all right. So, so the big question in the future, which app are you going to be using?
I'm going to ask Siri how to get me there, and then I'm going to open up Google Maps to check the traffic.
You're just going to run them both at the same time, just kind of toggling back and forth.
Yeah. Whatever. You know, I did want to say my battery died like crazy running Google Maps. The iPhone 5 battery drained like 25%.
So you didn't have it
in that,
plugged in?
No, I didn't. I mean, it was really I've used Siri for some long drives, Google, Apple Maps, and the battery life was A-okay. Yeah. I opened up Google Maps and my battery drained like crazy. I had that same experience.
So,
which is why I sit there and I go, I'll probably just use it for traffic. I won't actually use it to, you know, get my location and track me.
Well, and that'd be but it'd be interesting if it's the tracking that it is, and then I'd also want to be interested in looking at my data usage if that's the case. Because, you know, if that's corresponding to data usage, I don't know. I'm not as interested.
Right.
But I don't know. Well, people who are smarter than us will figure that out and write about it, and then we will read.
Yeah. They're not smarter than us. They just have more time for that sort of thing.
More, perhaps more technically savvy, maybe that's the word. But
They
have more time. That's all it is, because we're busy individuals. Otherwise, we'd totally be into it.
Yeah. Their lives have been automated to such a degree that they have time for that sort of thing.
There you go. I like it. You know, the other trick, P.S., just going to throw this one out there, is if you learn to not be tempted by the shiny objects and other things and learn to decrease your expenses in life, then you actually can live a relatively work less lifestyle, because you don't have to try to pay for as many things. Just putting that one out there.
I don't exactly understand what you're saying.
I feel obliged. True. I feel obliged to, you know, we can individually, maybe not as a society, but individually, it can be partially achieved. But the trick is to be content with where you're at.
Man, Furlough Bros philosophy.
That was deep.
It was
cool, man. Hey, good episode. Good episode.
Definitely, I liked it.
Awesome. Let's do this again next week, maybe.
All right. We are doing it again next week. Christmas Eve.
I don't know. I'm doing nothing. So.
Okay. I'm probably going to go up to the mountains for part of the weekend, but there's no reason why I can't be back by 8. So,
well, okay,
or
we can,
whenever we might not broadcast live, but
right,
yeah,
we can talk about it. We'll find a time. Love it. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlough, my Christmas shopping extraordinaire brother.
We're, not quite yet.
Not quite yet.
Probably he'll get there tomorrow.
That guy, his name is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. Oh, let's go, man. I'm ready.
Okay.
Wait, am I ready?
Yeah.
Just take me to my channel. Why do they gotta make this so hard?
I don't know, because I don't like you.
Good thing I know how to type in URLs, otherwise it would be very difficult.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd know how to find this page unless I knew how to type in a URL.
You know, it's a skill set, man. It really is.
Okay, you know, they say you're like in one of the top... What, were we reading this article on Furlow Bros? Where... You were you're like one of the top 10% searchers if you know how to use the Control F to search for something on a web page.
No way.
Yeah. Yes.
Because I use it incessantly.
Well, you are an expert. You're a top 10% web searcher.
Wow.
That's, I want to know what it takes to get to the 1%.
I know.
Come on.
I bet competition starts to get a little bit, healthier as you start getting up to the 2-3%.
Yeah, because that's part of it, like, you know, finding stuff on a page, but then I'm sure it gets into, like, all the special Boolean stuff and, you know, those crazy, like, I'm searching for this particular file type and stuff, which I always got to look that up because I don't have it memorized. But I know it exists, so maybe that puts me in the top 8%.
Nice. I hate to do this, but why are we having this conversation outside of the confines of the show?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, it's entertaining, which is the problem.
this will show up at the very end of the podcast. But
perfect.
Go ahead.
All right.